So, with that, let's get started. In case you missed the session from yesterday, my name is Jonathan Rosenblatt. I'm a developer advisor here at Microsoft Canada. And really, my job is to help you, as a developer, get more comfortable with the platform, with the Windows Azure platform, kind of move your applications to the platform, and really be there to field any kind of questions that you might have as to the process of moving towards the cloud and so on and so forth. So, all of my connection information is there. Feel free to connect with me in whatever network works for you, and you know, we'll get you started on your journey to Windows Azure. So for today's objectives, we're going to cover, like we did on Monday, three different areas. First of which, we're going to answer what is SQL Azure, really get an understanding of what happens underneath the covers, what it is, and so on and so forth. Talk about how we get started, some of the tools, what you need to know, some of the special considerations, and then we'll talk about some of the key aspects and concepts of the SQL Azure platform that you should know as you're building and architecting solutions that will target SQL Azure. And just so that you know, some of the things that we're going to be talking about today do in fact build up on Monday's session, which was getting started with Windows Azure. In case you missed that session, if you hit that URL, bit.ly/AzureCampGetStarted, you can actually see the recording from Monday as well as access the hands-on labs and information on how to post questions and so on and so forth for that particular session. So, what is SQL Azure? Really, as we talked about in the previous session, everything in the Azure world comes down to being available as a service. So SQL Azure is really no different. In this particular case, SQL Azure is really the SQL Server equivalent on the Azure platform, and it's delivered to you as a service that you can use and consume. Which, of course, if you remember from what we talked about on Monday, or in the Getting Started with Windows Azure, for those of you who are going to see the recording afterwards, the concept of coming up as a service is really talks about the fact that you get out-of-the-box support for scalability, high availability, and geographic distribution. You saw that with the other parts of the Windows Azure platform. This one is no different. And in this particular case, because you have these features already built in, really you can use SQL Azure for both simple and complex applications, depending of course on what the needs are. If you're going to be putting together an application that's really specific and needs very specific features of SQL Server, perhaps SQL Azure is not the best way to go for your particular solution. However, for the most part, SQL Azure will do a great job for your applications. Now, the nice thing is that very similar to the rest of the platform, when it comes to provisioning a server, it's actually done very much so through the Azure Management Portal, very much so easily like we did with everything else. And you saw that in the hands-on labs that you did for getting started with Windows Azure. So in this particular case, to provision a server, you'd go into that management portal, you'd go ahead and create a server, and I say server because really, it's not a server as we know it today, but rather a logical endpoint that you're going to connect to that contains your SQL databases. Once you go in, you're going to put in your SQL Azure credentials that you're going to set up as part of that setup process. You'll select the region of where you want your server to be, and then you'll add firewall rules to both enable communication from the Azure nodes or the compute nodes that you're going to have for your application. Or if you need additional firewall rules, say you're going to have an application that's hosted on-premise, or say you want to connect to the database directly to be able to upload your database or script or anything like that, you're going to go ahead and add firewall rules for those specific IPs or for the IP range, because at all times, really, you're going to want to make sure that the database is as locked down as possible. So the firewall rules allow you to do that. And then, while at the same time you could do it through the portal, if you wanted to do things in a more automated fashion, my apologies, you can actually do that through the Windows Azure PowerShell scripts that are now available, and you can actually get that at that address on your screen, wap-powershell.codeplex.com, or you could technically go at the REST-based API directly. It's entirely up to you, whatever works for your environment, but those are the options that you have, either through the Windows Azure Management Portal or through the PowerShell scripts or through REST APIs directly, up to you. So let's talk about actually building the database. One of the key features of SQL Azure is really the fact that it uses familiar technologies that you're currently using today with SQL Server. So what does that mean? It means the T-SQL that you're already used to. It means using the languages that you're already used to. If you're working with .NET framework, you know, you have the full framework via ADO.NET. Oops, my apologies. ADO.NET to be able to access the database from there. For C and C++, you have ODBC, Java, you have the provider for that, and PHP, same thing. So nothing there changes, really. Just really the endpoint that you're connecting to changes. The other nice thing is that out of the box, you also get support for the popular frameworks, such as OData and Entity Framework, WCF Data Services, and for those of you that use Hibernate, you can use all of those in the exact same way. Tooling-wise, we actually have support for the tools that you're going to be using for your on-premise SQL Server. So that includes your SQL Server Management Studio. Make sure, of course, that it's the R2 version or later. The 2008 Management Studio before R2 didn't actually know about SQL Azure, so the functionality for that one isn't actually there. You can use the SQL Server command line utilities, and then you can also use third-party applications. Again, whatever you're comfortable using and whatever you already know and you're using today, go ahead and use those as well. Some of the difference, though, and you remember I mentioned this in getting started with Windows Azure session, there are some differences that you're going to want to take into account. The first of which is just how the database works from an administration perspective. You're going to be looking at logical administration versus the physical administration of the box. Different things like the database and the log files are automatically placed for you so that you don't have to worry about all those. And the, one of the key features, actually, that I always highlight to developers is the fact that whenever you're creating or you're working with SQL Azure databases, at any given point in time, you actually have three replicas that you're maintaining for every database. So what does that mean? It means that when you're writing to the database, it writes three different times the same data. And that's really used for that high availability concept where if for whatever reason one of your replicas becomes unstable, or one of your databases, if you will, becomes unstable, rather than having service issues to your actual application, what SQL Azure will do in the back end is actually get rid of that replica, redirect you to one of the other replicas that it has. From your perspective or from the application's perspective, there's absolutely no difference. But what that allows a SQL Azure to do in the back end is then rather than worrying about repairing that replica, it could just get rid of it and then spin up a brand new replica to make sure that you have three at all times. So it actually works quite well from a high availability perspective in that your applications will never really notice the fact that there were any issues with your data back end. Other things to consider is that the maximum database size for a SQL Azure database today is 50 gigabytes. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you can't store more than 50 gigabytes, and we'll talk about what you could do if you have more data than 50 gigs. We can talk about that a little bit later. But from an actual database itself, today the limit is 50 gigabytes. So, one of the other things, too, that you have to keep in mind is some of the unsupported SQL Server features that you have SQL Server on-premise, but you don't have in SQL Azure today. That includes backup or store commands, different things like linked servers, distributed transactions, spatials, service broker. For those of you who are using the CLR or the Common Language Runtime, that, of course, is not supported, being a shared model. You know, that's from a security perspective and from a maintainability perspective, that's not supported. And if you're using SQL Agent, that's not supported as well. Now, if you do searches around the internet, there are various ways to get around some of these. But if we're talking about SQL Azure proper, then no, these particular features aren't supported. Now, from a tooling perspective, we talked about that a couple of seconds ago, but you actually have additional options depending on how you want to work with your database. When we look at thin client database development, you can actually do all of your development for SQL Azure right up in your browser. Once you're in your management portal and you're going to, you click on your database, you actually have a button that lights up in the ribbon that actually allows you to manage the database right from your browser. And that loads the SQL Azure management portal, which gives you access to your database, very much so similar to the thick client database tools that you're used to, but again, all within your web browser. So if you're on the go or you don't necessarily have the tools installed on your machine, or better yet, maybe you don't want to install the tools on your machine, that's an excellent way to go about it. However, when we do get into rich client database development, you have options now. There's brand new tooling called the SQL Server Data Tools that's available, and you can actually download it. I have the link for you right on the page if you scroll down a little bit. So you can install those and you can work right within Visual Studio to create your database, modify it, and really it's like working with code, but specifically designed for databases. Of course, the nice part about this is that you can work both connected and disconnected from the server, and you can actually target different databases like SQL Server 2005 and above or SQL Azure. So it's kind of really nice from having options on how you want to work with your database. From a deployment perspective, you could go the traditional route where in your management studio, you can go and you can script the database and you specify that you are scripting for SQL Azure, which makes all the necessary changes to be able to support SQL Azure. But if you wanted an alternative to the scripting approach, there's a brand new framework. It's called the Data Tier Application Framework, which again, I have the resource link for you on the page. You can go ahead and download. And what this really allows you to do is simplify the entire process of developing, migrating, and versioning the applications by really creating a single unit of either schema or schema plus the data that you could then deploy. Now, the management, the Azure management portal in this particular case actually now has the ability to support that. So again, going back to the fact that you have options in terms of tooling on how you want to deploy your database. From a security perspective, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that for server-level security, only SQL authentication is currently supported. So if you're using integrated authentication today with your on-premise solution, that's not going to work, so that probably would require a little bit of change in your application. But otherwise, you know, if you're using SQL authentication today, that there's absolutely no difference. Other thing that you can do from a access control perspective is that once you're actually connected into the database and you want to create additional logins, additional databases, so on and so forth, that's all done directly to the master database if you wanted to do it programmatically. The ideal, though, is that you would go into the management portal and do it from there, but you do have the ability to script all of that if need be. So I have some additional things on here for you in terms of logins and the different roles that you have that are in fact slightly different than your SQL Server on-premise installation today. So just make sure that as you're going through and you're architecting these solutions, that you're aware of these subtle differences so that you can take them into account when you're doing your database development, when you're doing your code. Similarly then, on the database level, again, you have the same concepts where the admin login that you created while you were creating your server is in fact automatically the DBO set on the database. And then you have full rights to the database, you can do whatever you want. You can create additional users, again, through the management portal or through the various different commands. And you can really organize all of your data objects into the containers as you would on-premise. So really no difference there. So just making sure that you see the subtle differences in terms of where the users are with respect to the database level. And again, when it comes to connecting, I mentioned this before, a lot of this is actually the same, and that's done intentionally to make sure that the path to migrating your application is in fact as seamless as possible. So in this particular case, at the end of the day, what you're actually connecting to is the same TDS protocol and TDS endpoint that you're used to when you're working with your SQL Server database on-premise. In this case, you're going to add the SSL option to make sure that all the data is encrypted. And as I mentioned earlier, you're going to add the firewall rules. If your application is not hosted within Windows Azure, you're going to want to make sure that the IP addresses of the server where your application is connecting from is included in your firewall rules. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to create that connection. In terms of connection strings, or really when it comes down to the code, you can see in the example there that there really isn't too much of a difference. The source is in fact different in that you have your server.database.windows.net, and encrypt equals true. Everything else, pretty much the same. The other nice thing too is that the management portal, when you go into the databases, you can actually have it create connection strings for you. So it'll create ODBC connection strings for you, it'll create PHP connection strings for you, and ADO.NET connection strings for you, so that you don't have to go through the trivial task of putting it all together, making sure that it works, so on and so forth. Very simple function, but I don't know about you, but it saved me several hours in trying to figure out how to put together a connection string. So, when it comes to special considerations for connecting, there are a couple of things that you need to note when you're connecting in from your application. First of which is that if you're using the older tools, one of the key things that you'll want to keep in mind is that you need to use the login as login at server. Now, this doesn't have to be the full server name, it's just that first part before the .database, but the older tools will require that in order to be able to log into a SQL Azure database. Other thing to note is different things like you have on the screen there, where idle connections are terminated after 30 minutes. So you can't have an open connection at all times. And also, transactions that are running for more than 24 hours will in fact get terminated without error to make sure that, you know, just in case there's suspicious activity or something might look like suspicious activity, SQL Azure will go in and terminate those connections for you. And again, keep in mind that there are no errors there reported, so just make sure that if you suspect that you might have transactions that will run longer than 24 hours, that you keep that in mind. The other thing, unlike SQL Server on-premise, is the ability to, or inability to, go cross-database. So if you're working with multiple databases, whereas with SQL Server on-premise, you can actually put multiple databases together and query them that way. In this particular case, each database is in fact on its own. You'll have to bring back the data set into your application tier from the multiple databases and then put it together there. We talked about this also in the Getting Started with Windows Azure with regards to some of the data services that are available, the first of which is SQL Azure Reporting. And for those of you that are used to working with SQL Server Reporting services that is on-premise, this is actually the same thing, but again, delivered as a service on the Windows Azure platform. Which, of course, what does that mean? As you've heard me say several times before, out of the box you get the scalability, the availability, and the geographic distribution. Now, with that in mind, again, you're talking about ideal situations for using Azure Reporting is creating operational reports or any kind of reporting that you need off of your SQL Azure database. So keep that in mind, is that it's not for SQL Azure or SQL Server on-premise, but it is in fact for giving visualization access into your SQL Azure database. Now, in terms of that, again, very much so, everything that you're used to already doing. So, similar to how you would do it on-premise, you go ahead and you provision a report server, this time through the portal. Then you're going to go ahead and build the report itself through the designer, and then deploy the report to the report server, and then render the reports with the report viewer control. Very much so, the same as you would today with your on-premise installation. Differences here, of course, is that you actually have different options and different ways that you can get it in there. You can work with the report items themselves, you can work with the web services or the URL access, and the difference in control, or you know, the various different types, basically. From an identity and an access control perspective, again, very much so similar to the databases, where only SQL authentication is in fact supported. And the admin user that you have that's configured when you're provisioning the reporting server, That one has all rights to the server, and really you should only be using that for administrative purposes. In order to get into the actual reports, you're going to create additional users that will then have access to the reports to do whatever it is that they need. And very similar to how you would typically work with Azure Reporting Services, you do in fact have the item level permissions to access the folders and the reports themselves. So you can configure who has access to each one of those reports. From a differences perspective, again, you're looking at the administration from a logical versus a physical perspective, very much the same as SQL Azure databases themselves. In this particular case, the report catalog and the temporary databases are all automatically provisioned for you. And whereas typically you would work with the report manager with SQL Server on-premise, now you're actually going to work with the Windows Azure Management Portal to handle all that functionality for you. As of right now, only SQL Azure data sources are available for the reporting. So just keep that part in mind. From an unsupported features perspective of what reporting services on-premise has that reporting doesn't have in SQL Azure is the ability to do subscriptions and scheduling, caching, and all those. If and when they come, we don't know, but just keep those in mind is that if you're using those today, then you'll have to work around those particular features. From a data synchronization perspective, again, we touched upon this in data services for in the getting started with Windows Azure session, you have SQL Azure Data Sync, which is a very nice framework that allows you, again, as a service, to be able to synchronize data across either SQL Azure databases, so multiple SQL Azure databases, or to be able to synchronize from your SQL Server on-premise to SQL Azure database in the cloud. All of which is, again, configurable through the management portal for you to be able to do. When we look at different things that you need to consider here, the nice thing is that from a resolution perspective, there's a resolution policy that's configured centrally, so for all of your synchronization solution. You can decide on which direction you'd like to synchronize. And if one of the other things to keep in mind is that if you need synchronization that's less than 5 minutes or more than, actually really focused on the less than 5 minutes part, this might not actually work. You do have the restriction that it must be between 5 minutes and 1 month. So that's really what you have to work with. The other thing you have to consider is the fact that in order for this to work with your on-premise solution, there does in fact need to be an agent that's installed on your on-premise servers to be able to have the synchronization work. We talked about earlier about the fact that databases are really capped at the 50 gig mark, but really from a scalability perspective, you can actually go across multiple databases. And actually, in fact, that is a much better way to go about data because of the fact that as you spread across multiple databases, you actually do, in fact, have the redundancy and the scalability of each one of those scaling out separately as it needs to. And that's where SQL Azure Federations comes in. Now that's a whole topic in and of itself, so I have actually a great video link for you right on the page where you can learn more about SQL Azure Federations. But really think about federations as your ability to stitch multiple different databases together that hold different data, but that do have keys that you can mix and match across the databases that allows you to, like I said, connect them across multiple databases. So we went through pretty much the entire SQL Azure platform and all the various different functionality that's available with them. Just again, as per the previous session with Azure Camps, we have specific hands-on labs for each session. So to access the hands-on lab for this session, that actually really goes through the process of provisioning a SQL server and then provisioning a SQL database, putting in some data, working with the data back and forth, integrating that into the applications. All of that's available in the hands-on lab. You can get that at bit.ly/AzureCamp. SQL Azure, all one word. Make sure that you also respect the fact that there are uppercase letters because it is case sensitive. You'll also have on the page the ability to, or all the information that you need in order to post questions on this session. And really that's about it for today. Just keeping in mind, of course, additional Azure Camp sessions. We had the first one on Monday, which was getting started with Windows Azure. There's another one on Friday talking about specific application scenarios and how you can use Windows Azure to light up various different types of applications. And then next week, like I said, we're going to go through a little bit deeper in terms of talking about specifically around storage. And then talking about on Wednesday how to secure and connect different parts of your application, and then how do you scale your entire solution. To find out more information about all of these other different sessions, make sure that you check out bit.ly/AzureCamps. All of the sessions and all of the information is all on there.